Welcome to the Innovation Calling Podcast,
where we connect creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Greger
and Sia Yasotornrat.
Hey, it's Aaron Greger.
And it's Sia Yasotornrat.
And before we jump into this episode, we need to let you know about our next live recording for our Women in Tech Leadership series. So when is it?
It is September 3rd, Aaron.
Where is it?
At City Central North Dallas, 17250 Dallas Parkway in Dallas.
Dallas, Texas. Home of our studio, home of where we do our events. And this month for September 3rd, we are welcoming Dr. Dawn Owens, who is the clinical assistant professor and the information systems director over at UT Dallas. And this is going to be a very interesting conversation because we're going to be talking about how we encourage STEM at a younger age, how we encourage women leaders, how we build, what we do next, a lot of good stuff about women in leadership from an educational perspective versus a corporate perspective. And Dr. Owens has a corporate perspective too, so we're going to get it all.
Exactly. Super excited.
Yes. Super excited.
Super.
All right. So let's talk about Ellen. This is our latest, what we're going to about to hear is our latest live recording podcast. We just had Miss Ellen Sundra with us.
Yes. So Ellen Sundra is the VP of Americas Systems Engineering at Forescout. And I got to tell you, Aaron, I got text messages from the event afterwards of other individuals who didn't make it, but they had heard from their folks that attended saying, hey, I've been told I should consider looking at Forescout because of Ellen's management and the leadership.
I think everybody wants to work at Forescout after that event.
No kidding, right?
I'm thinking about working at Forescout after that event, for cripe's sake. Like, she was awesome.
Yeah, no. I mean, what I love about the women that we've been interviewing in general, there's a lot of humility in these conversations. And I just love the fact that she said, look, to be a great leader, you can show imperfection. And I just love that statement.
Yeah, I thought she was very, just so insightful on many different things, just in technology in general. Here's what makes me happy is we had a lot of questions. I always love questions. That means people are engaging and listening. But the one person who, one of the attendees, literally had just pages of notes. And I love stuff like that because that's just this ability to provide that opportunity to hear from someone like that. You know darn well that person is going home and she is like, I mean, we know her, so we know she's doing this for real. But she is mapping out like next steps and what to do. And just to be able to provide that opportunity gives me chills.
It actually makes me, it encourages us to keep doing this event because people keep asking me, they're like, you pull up your hair every month trying to put this event together because it's not easy, theoretically speaking. It should be.
It's not.
But it's not. But when you see that one person and when you know darned well in 10 years time, that person is going to be in that seat. That to me is just like, okay, makes it worth it. It is. I feel like we're paying it forward in our own way.
Yeah. And I think too, one of the big perspectives I really want to cover, and I know this is a little bit longer than we go in, but leadership in technology doesn't just mean you're working for corporate. Leadership is stepping out on your own and doing your own thing and leading a company or leading whatever it is. So if you're running a business or you're like, well, it's corporate. No. For me, I had to learn. It wasn't leadership I learned in corporate America. It was leadership I learned after stepping out and saying, I want to do this. I want to create it and building a team around me to help that happen. And it was not a corporate thing. But I think the insights I've learned from these women make me a better entrepreneur too.
Oh, I absolutely 100% agree. There's no two ways about it. And so, I mean, we're almost killing the conversation.
I know, because there's a whole conversation behind this, but.
Yeah, no. So on that note, folks, I hope you guys enjoy our time with Ellen Sundra, who was our special guest in our latest Women in Tech Leadership monthly live podcast recording series.
All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Greger.
And I'm Sia Yasotornrat.
All right. Today we have Ellen. Thank you so much for joining us, Ellen.
Thank you for having me.
Everyone, welcome. We have another, I forgot to say it, we're at a live recording right now.
Yeah,
tonight.
This is our Women Tech Leadership event. I just love, there's some individuals that are holding their glasses of wine, so they're doing like the golf clap with a wrist. I'm looking at you. You know who I'm looking at.
We do not drop wine here, so it's all good.
So excellent. Well, I do want to kick off and say thank you very much. I know the summer months tend to be a little bit crazy, but Ellen, thank you for flying in from Washington, D.C.
I am very excited to be here.
Are your arms tired?
My arms are tired. I'm good. I've been working out for this. I've been preparing. I'm all right.
I was going to say my jokes will get worse as it goes. So I hope everyone is happy we've peaked. So Ellen, I have had many nice conversations and email exchanges with you. And so before we get started on anything, I just kind of like to take it back a little bit in time when I didn't ask you these questions because, well, why not throw some loops out there every now and then? But you are now in a technology-oriented business. Was this something you dreamt about when you were younger?
You know, it's interesting when I look back on the history, the role that I'm in today, the team that I lead is systems engineering. It's like sales engineering. I didn't even know it existed, but I did.
I don't know what that noise is. Sorry.
There's something knocking somewhere.
See, and I are giving each other the evil eye right now. Like, what the hell? I'm sorry, Alan. Keep going.
No worries. But I was always a techie kid. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. Totally going to date myself here. But, you know, I was always the kid that went to the electronic toys. And I was very into gadgets and things. So, it doesn't surprise me that I've ended up in this field. But I didn't necessarily, when I went into college, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go into computer science. Now, that was late 80s, so I totally just dated myself. But once I got into college, I realized that I did a lot better in the math classes, the programming classes. And so I sort of steered that way and sort of found myself after college. But it wasn't something that I really kind of planned to go into.
So, when you were in the 70s and 80s, are your parents in the engineering science world or?
No, my mom did teach math at an elementary level, but they're both lifetime academics. Like my father, had a million different degrees, you know, a master's, a PhD, and he was constantly in school and learning. And then my mom also was a working woman that just, you know, had a, was constantly interested in learning new things, constantly traveling, constantly reading. So I was surrounded by that, but not necessarily computers or technology.
Okay, so you said that when you were younger, you gravitated toward math, actually in later years.
Well, in college, I realized I just did better in math, so I just took more math classes.
Okay, because you were getting straight A's at that point, right? And you're like, hey, easy A for me.
Keep doing math.
Yeah, so
I was going to ask, what about brothers? Did you have brothers? Because you played basketball. I know you said you played basketball in college, and not that basketball's just a boys, because I played basketball too, but especially back in that day. Did you have brothers that influenced you at all?
Yeah, I guess four. I have two older sisters, an older brother. My brother did play basketball.
Yeah.
I grew up with the love of going to watch, you know, Georgetown basketball and going to watch the Celtics. And so, yes, I was constantly surrounded by sports growing up.
So if you don't know, guys, she's taller than me, which doesn't take much to be taller than me. But
even with the 6-inch heels?
Yeah, even with my 6. Amazing that my sister had to give me. But no, what's impressive to me, though, is you talked about this earlier about you were in computer science, you got your degree in computer science, but you didn't necessarily go in saying, hey, I'm going to be a systems engineer, right? Like you kind of found your way into the world of sales engineering and systems engineering.
It is. It's funny because there is no degree for systems engineering, but there's a very specific skill set that's needed. And so my path was a little unconventional. I graduated from college with a computer science degree. There were 4 people that graduated with computer science in 1993.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Wait, Rollins College is in Florida.
It's in Florida.
It's just gay Florida. I was born in Orlando, so yay. Yeah.
It was so small that, and then the funny thing, the other 3 people lived off campus. I was the only one that lived on campus. So I was never allowed to skip a class because if I didn't show up for the class, they'd come and knock on my door. So they kept me going. It was 2 brothers that lived off campus and then a woman in her 40s who decided to go back to school. So I really had this support system, a very, very unconventional support system that would come find me. And I got my way through college doing a lot of programming. I actually learned on a mainframe. And I came out with this degree.
I'm a COBOLer.
Oh, yeah. So
date yourself further, girls.
When I graduated, I went and worked for an architectural firm. And it was, computers really weren't that big of a thing. But they were looking for a few skill sets. I went in and I went in as a programmer. I was doing some Perl programming. And I ended up kind of you know, it's funny looking back on it, I wasn't offended at the time, but I was also used as kind of like a receptionist. And so I would find myself when the receptionist wasn't there, they'd be like, can you go sit at the desk? And then I would have like free time. And people would ask me questions about, you know, how does this new Windows thing work? And they didn't know like DOS, they didn't know command languages. So I ended up helping a lot of architects learn how to use their computer. And I put together like a little guide of just steps on how to do simple things. And someone said, you're a really good trainer. So I was like 22 teaching these architects how to use their computer. And I realized I didn't really like the position I was in and sitting at that desk. And at the time, I didn't know to be offended. I just didn't. I was like, I just don't like it. I don't know what it was. And I went into training. I thought, you know, I'm going to be a trainer. I think I'm good at this. I'm good at simplifying technical subjects. I understand computers. So I went to work for a training company. And they took me in and they said, look, you know, you don't have all this the skill, the knowledge yet, but as long as you have the soft skills and as long as you can present, we will teach you. And so I had this great, you know, the owner of the company, he's actually still around. He writes books, Mark Manassi, had a small group of trainers and we traveled around the country and they taught me things like data communications, PC troubleshooting. Eventually I did Microsoft certification classes. So picture this, I walk into a class, at this point I'm like 23, I walk into a class, typical class size was about, you know, 40 to 60 people, not one woman, and average age, 50 years old. I mean, it really was a lot of men doing data communications, right? So we were talking about like multiplexing, like stuff that was really old, but I knew it inside and out. And it was very formative for me because, again, I was naive. I walked in thinking, I know what I'm talking about. And some of the first classes, the guys would come up and they'd be like, who's the instructor? And I'd be like, oh, I'm the instructor. I know this and I know this and I've turned this and I have this certification. And then I learned after about 6 months when someone came up and asked me because then they would be like, who's the main instructor?
Oh.
So I'm like, okay. So I would literally, I would literally learn. I would walk out the door, walk back in and be like, hi, I'm Ellen. I'm your main instructor. And so it really...
Oh, they coached you in a way.
They did. And I was a little naive to what I was getting myself into. But in retrospect, when I look back, I should have been offended, but I don't know that I was...
Sometimes being naive helps, right?
Yeah, but, being that young.
But you've got that little fire in the belly of, I think... I don't know if it's fire in the belly or just having that humility to take feedback, perhaps, do you think?
Yeah, well, certainly I firmly believe that being coachable is important in any aspect of your life. So yes, taking feedback is always really important. And you know, that goes both ways. At the end of the first class, I mean, I taught the class and the reviews came back and they were all 5 stars, right? 1 out of 5. And I thought, you know what? I can do this. They all appreciated my style was very different than what you get with a lot of trainers and back then teaching technical subjects, right? Which is I'm the smartest person in the room. I'm going to tell you the way it is. You're going to listen to me. You know, again, looking back at kind of the way I made decisions, I remember when I was in high school, my mom bought a computer and it really wasn't even a computer. It's like a word processor. And she was super frustrated. Like she didn't understand all the features. And I just remember her like on the verge of tears. And she's like, this is an awful process. I thought, why is it so hard? Why doesn't someone just help her understand which one's going to meet her needs and which one should she buy? And I look back at that and I thought, I should sell these things because it really, if you can explain how something works and make someone feel really comfortable about the decision and the money that they're spending on something. So it is kind of funny to look back and think, I think I wanted to be a sales engineer when I was 15. I just didn't know what it was.
So, well, I was going to ask, how did you end up in cybersecurity then on the journey? Because if you were training, how did you go from that shift? Yeah. I know you've been at Force Scout for a while.
I had a technical background. Mm-hmm. I understood the concepts. And someone came along and said, I got tired of traveling. It was literally, I'd leave every Sunday. I'd come back every Friday. I would teach classes all over the world. Sometimes we'd have interpreters. And eventually, after about 5 years, I hit burnout. And I was like, I don't know what's next.
It's a long time for
that. I was young. Yeah. Right? I don't know that I could survive that type of travel now. But someone came and said, you know, if you're really good at training and explaining things, you'd be good at selling. You know, my first instinct was like, I don't want to sell, but when they explained what sales engineering was, it was actually someone that came along that I'd met and in one of my classes, and they encouraged me to apply for a job, and it was with a small company at the time called iPass. They were a private little company. And so I went in, and then I realized it was all men, all sales guy, and they just stared at me like, what is she doing? Like, what? Who is this? And she's my engineer. And there was one particular sales guy who really, we worked really well together. And he kept asking for me. We were in a pool of engineers. He kept asking for me. And it was because he was very self-deprecating. When he'd go into a meeting, he'd be like, I'm just the sales guy, you know? And when he would have a male sales engineer who was the smartest guy in the room, it made him look even stupider. And it, you know, I shouldn't say made, that doesn't sound right.
No,
he wasn't,
yeah,
stupid,
I know what you're saying.
But it made people uncomfortable because he would say, you know, I'm not so smart. And the sales guy would be like, I'm super smart. But I found, you know, having a woman, it was disarming. And he could be sort of self-deprecating. And, you know, I wasn't offensive. And so we just made this really good partnership. And then what happened was he left the company a couple of years, said, hey, I'm going to go to this new job. I want to bring my engineer with me. And then he went to a new job and was like, I want to bring my engineer with me. So we actually ended up at three different companies. I like to say I held on to his coattails and kind of rode the wave. But he taught me how to sell, and I taught him how the technology works. So we made a really good partnership. We ended up at Forescout, and eventually, I went into management, and we called it the Great Divorce after 18 years of working together. And
wow.
I know. So it was a good partnership, but we taught each other a lot.
Wow. Okay. So I'm so envious of the fact that you're technical and you have a personality. I think it's so critical to understand sales engineers, systems engineers. You have to have a certain amount of personality to do the job. Communication skills. That's the soft skills I think you were talking about earlier. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit, if you don't mind. So we talked about you as you grow your team and what you're looking for. Just so we put things in perspective, how many people actually are under your organization, Ellen?
So today it's about 70. And I don't know if this question's coming next, but I have 70 under me. And as of today, I have two females.
Wow.
So, and I'm very excited about the second female. For a very long time, we only had one. And the new one is, she came on about 6 weeks ago, but we made a conscious effort to really change the way that we put job descriptions out there. We changed our interviewing processes. Instead of putting like a bunch of acronyms on a job description, I put, you know, transferable skills. We want to know kind of, here are the things. I come from a training background. I firmly believe I can train anyone on a technical subject. I can't teach you soft skills as easily. And so what I wanted was to find someone who has those skills that is, you know, passionate about the technology, but they can articulate a message and they're not condescending. And they have good presentation skills, right? So
wait, not condescending. Wait, what? In my history of working with systems engineers, sales engineers, I am used to hearing the, oh, that's so cute. You really don't understand.
You know what the saying that I just really gets under my skin is when someone says, oh, I'll dumb it down for you. And I'm like, no, you're going to simplify it for them. Yes. Yeah. And you're going to help them understand. But I do feel like with the proper explanation in the proper training, Forescout actually adopted this style and said, look, why don't we just take all of our salespeople and why don't you create a technical class so we can train all of our salespeople to actually become more technical. And it was really successful. Everyone was really appreciative of the investment that we made in them. And I think Forescout has a really technical sales force now because they've taken the time to understand what they're selling, you know, and the bits and bolts behind it.
I mean, I hate to say it, but maybe it's because of bias, but I feel like in security, the sales folks have to be somewhat technical. It's not, security isn't an easy subject to talk about, and you have to apply it over other technologies.
I completely agree. I mean, there are some people who are just really charismatic and good salespeople that kind of find some success in the cyber world, but it was a little bit self-serving for me to train the sales team because to me, having more technical salespeople meant that my team weren't so dependent upon the sales engineers all the time. So yes, ideally the sales teams are technical, but the engineers still needed, right?
Right. So as we were talking about the folks that you're hiring, and it wasn't supposed to point out the fact that there's only two women on your team. In fact, just so everyone knows, Forescout, 1,500 employees, and you have like 7-8 females in executive leadership roles.
And our board.
on the board as well. I mean, on top of that, I think board is making 9 or 10, actually, I think, mm-hmm. when I was looking. It's insane, you guys. And to me, that's when we talk about, you know, equality in business in general. I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm not trying to push a propaganda that people think that it is. It's just the fact that you've got like 10 executive female leadership roles in a 1500 size company. That's impressive. Mm-hmm. Because we're not even talking middle management. We're not talking, you know, even just the workforce. And that, to me, props to Forescout.
Yeah, true. We do. I mean, we have, you know, obviously I run the America sales engineering team, but Julie Cullivan is our CIO. She's also now our chief people person. She runs HR. She did such a great job. She's an operational machine. We have Tony Berkey, who runs our channel engineering team. In technical roles, you know, Ilette Kuttner, who runs our innovation development team. So there, it is a really great culture, and that's, you know, a big part of my success as well.
Okay, so being that you are part of a highly motivated culture for, again, diversity in that context, why do you think you only have 2 women in your organization?
So...
I just made her stop and not drink her water.
It's, honestly... I just wasn't getting any candidates. There is really, across the industry, I could probably give you a handful of female sales engineers, which is kind of crazy because we have a great skill set to be successful, but there's no degree for sales engineering. If you talk to every sales engineer, someone said, hey, you would be good at sales engineering. Come over and be a sales engineer. Or systems engineer is kind of the term that we use. So people don't know about it. And so what ends up happening is we get the same candidates over and over again. I don't see any new candidates. And there's really very, very little bit of diversity across the candidate pool. The female that we just got in, she actually was not a sales engineer. She was working for another company, and she kind of saw systems engineer, and she saw the description, and she's like, you know, I really want to do more. I want to solve problems. And so we attracted her by changing the job description. But I think we need to do more. And so one of the initiatives that we're doing at Forescout that I just started this summer is I asked for more interns. I was like, I need to really develop more different candidates, not just female, but diverse candidates. So I asked for 2 interns in the DC area, which is where I live. And the CEO said, that's great, but I would also like you to have 2 interns in California at our headquarters. So I had 4 interns this year, and 3 of them are females. Oh, and they're all, thank you. They've all earned it. They were really the best candidates, right? It's not that I said I'm only going to choose females, which is how we ended up with 1 male as well. But I chose candidates that had degrees, technical degrees, that were diverse, that were in clubs, that had other activities than just the technical skill set I was looking for. I was looking for really well-rounded. And then we interviewed them, and again, personality came out. So I was really excited to find 3 female engineers who are loving the job. I just got a note from one today that was like, I'm so excited. I got exposure to these different roles, and she's loving it. And so I think that's our responsibility is to, how do you really cultivate more candidates? If you're not getting them across your desk, you have to create them.
So... Actually, it's a good point because we have next month or September, we have UTD coming, and one of the conversations we want to have.
Aaron, wait, stop. What's UTD?
University of Texas of Dallas, UT Dallas. And we want to have those conversations of, okay, we're talking about leadership, how to get your own career, but what can we do in the cultivating section to actually get more women set up for jobs like this? So any advice, any ideas too? I love the internship, but anything that at the college level, at the high school level, at the STEM level, you think of STEM and then it's programming, right? But this is a lot of women may not want to program, but this could be a great field for them because it's the people skills.
I think it's a misnomer, people. Aaron, is yeah. People think, oh, I'm going to go into a
100%.
STEM, but I've got personality. Why would I want to be a
exactly.
coder?
Because I don't want right. to find, I mean, that was my problem. I didn't want to sit for 10 hours looking for a missing period. So how can we develop and get them and educate at the lower level to bring them
perspective. I think that's a big part of this internship, but you're right. It's the conversations we have to have with them, and it's almost educating the counselors. So I have two nieces who are brilliant, and they're both in college right now. They're rising juniors, and both of them were very technical, kind of growing up, I guess. But we had a family business. It was a sports business. It was fun. It was with kids. And my one niece worked for us, and she said, "Hey, you know, Aunt Ellen, I'm going to quit because I want to go work at Best Buy." And she was like 15 at the time. And she's like, "I really want to learn about computers." And really quickly, she went from the blue shirt to the white shirt, or vice versa. I don't remember. But it meant that she could now sell computers. And she was really technical, really into technology and understanding computers. My other niece, also really into math. She was kind of a fun, you know, her fun family thing was that she would recite pi to like the 200th degree, right? And I just loved it. I'm so proud of them now. But they went into college, and they both went down like the InfoSec route. And the summer after their first year, floating in a lake, I remember saying, "Hey, so how was the first year of college? What did you guys do?" And Amy said, "You know, I'm looking at marketing, InfoSec marketing." And Katie said, "You know, I'm looking at finance and accounting." And I, for a moment, I'm like, "Why not cyber? Like, cyber is so fun." And I realized that, you know, this is a formidable year. It's what they wanted to do. But kind of investigating, it was the first time that I understood that a lot of their decisions are made based upon recommendations from counselors. What their friends are doing, right, and their classes. And it's that point in time that we need to tell them and help them understand that cyber doesn't just mean programming, that there's a lot of different routes that you can take. So I think educating those counselors and kind of getting more exposure to them at that point when they're going to make that decision and invest their time is really important, which is why this internship, although it's a sales or systems engineering internship, one of the things I really focused on was I want to get them exposure. I want them to spend time with the field marketing team at Forescout, because they do cyber events, right? I want her to spend time with our government affairs. So they spent some time on Capitol Hill this summer with a conference on addictive technology. And they came back and they're like, "This is so cool. I never thought of these kind of things." Just today, they spent time with our internal finance, strategic. He builds all of our contracts and our modeling. But again, it's around cyber programs. And so getting them exposure to being a systems engineer or getting a technical degree does not just mean programming. There's so many different ways to use those skill sets.
Can I be an intern? That sounds like a lot of fun. Like, yeah, I know. It sounds way, but that would require me to actually work again, right?
It does, but they get paid. I mean, it's not a bad gig.
So speaking of not bad gig, and it's, what did you say, fun? Help me understand, how is a CISSP, which is what I understand it to be, a very hard certification, fun?
Can we describe what it is first?
Oh, wait, that okay, was Ellen, a lot what's of a letters. CISSP? Because I didn't write it down.
Oh, you're going to make me pull out an acronym. I don't talk real.
Certified Information Security Professional.
I'm just teasing. You know, I think There's certifications. To me, it's like a stamp to say, "Look, I put in the time, the energy, the research. I can learn this," and it's kind of a validation for you, especially in the technology world. Because I'm actually seeing more and more people skipping college, getting technical degrees, and going down that technical route without going to the 4-year school. So I think that certification is another route that they can take. At some point, you know, in your career, real life experience is really important, right? I want to know that you've come in and that you've done it and you understand it. Maybe not exactly the skill set I'm looking for, but if you have if you're capable of learning technical subjects, then we can teach you what you need to know. So that certification is just one more way of saying, "Hey, look, I can go through this pretty rigorous class and I can take this test and, you know, I'm capable of learning."
Okay. So as you're growing this team, you say 70 strong individuals, which I'm sure are very capable individuals. Mm-hmm. Are you saying then degrees, a 4-year traditional degree that you're saying, that we talk about bachelor degrees, is not a requisite in order to be a successful systems engineer or sales engineer?
It's not. It says preferred but not required. And I have people on my team that don't have 4-year degrees. What I look for more is, what are you going to bring to the team? I don't even like looking at what your past jobs are or your skill sets. I want to know kind of what your title does not have to be. You were a systems engineer. I mean, I would have a very limited pool. And actually, if I can kind of pivot to my success at Forescout, I think a big part of it was because I hired the right people. And when I got my first opportunity to go, actually, I'll be honest, I wasn't even in leadership when I brought on one of my top talents. It was a customer that I recognized, had a great skill set, loved the product, was really passionate about it, and said, you know what, you should come over and be a systems engineer because you will help other customers use the product really well. Brought him in, very successful, and then I sort of started this reputation of, hey, she attracts good talent. And then, you know, when it was recommended to go into management, I was like, that wasn't what I was thinking, but they were like, no, you realize that you've built this team around you and you're really good at doing hiring and looking for talent. And when I took a step back, I was like, wow, you know, we have a really great team, a really diverse team. And so that kind of helped me get my first start into management and building a team. And as I moved up, it's the team around me that has made me more successful. And so it's a really important part of making sure that you look for the right skill sets when you hire.
So you sound like a very interactive leader, if you will, which means to me, and I've seen this in other discussions that you have because I'm a stalker and I've been researching you, is tell me about how you view being imperfect in your leadership and how does that play a role in your team today?
Yeah, I love that. I actually saw it was an Army captain got an award, and she stood up there and she was talking about how she was accepting a different award, and someone was like, "Oh, you have to dress this way, you have to look this way. Make sure you don't talk about your dad who was a plumber." And she was like, "You know what? We need more leaders that are showing that you're not perfect, that you are imperfect and that you show your flaws, and you don't have to have a perfect life, and you don't have to, you know, it's okay to talk about the fact that you may have grown up in an area that maybe wasn't so affluent." And so she's like, young girls look at people on the cover of the magazine, these women CEOs or these women leaders who've really made it to the top, and they look perfect, right? They look like they have it all together. So when I was listening to her talk, I was like, oh, that's a job for me. I'm totally good at being imperfect. I can do this. I can be a leader, and I can show that sometimes I'm a hot mess, right? Sometimes I come in and I'm like got 10 things going on, and I'm, you know, just trying to keep my day together. But I do think that it's important as role models and in leadership that it's okay if we make mistakes. It's okay if we don't have our act together. It's okay if we need to take a day to go get some other things in order. And so I do think we have to show our vulnerabilities and have to show that we're human. Otherwise, people are going to look and say, there's no way I can achieve that.
Okay. So
I just want to go back. I don't want to go too far out of the hiring because I want to dig into your hiring process a little bit. You talked about soft skills. I get that. You talked about building this great team. Can you tell me, I know since technical is not as important, the check marks aren't as important to you, what is absolutely must-haves for you when you're hiring that you've been able to create this great team?
Yeah, so I also stalked you guys and I listened. I became addicted to your podcast. And I know I'm not allowed to cuss, so I'm going to tell you.
No, you can cuss all you want.
I can beep it out.
Yeah, this is called editing. That's why we're not live streaming, by the way. Edit.
I'm going to use it. We have a no-jerk policy. Right?
Okay. No pull?
Yeah, no pull policy. That's that is our policy. And really, especially because you can find that in a really technical world, right? Someone who's like super smart, stump the chump, I'm the smartest person in the room. So I look for more of what they don't have, which is that ego or that attitude. But yes, personable. My interview style is I just want to get on the phone and let's see how far it goes before I actually ask you a question. Can I just have a conversation with you? By the time the interview, now that I have a management team, by the time that that hiring process, that interviewee gets to me, I know they've been technically vetted. I know that we've already done background checks. I just want to know, can I have a conversation with you without having to like ask you questions? Like, let's just talk about the industry or whatever comes up. So that's important to me, having that conversation. I also want to see how you add to the team. And this is something I've heard multiple times, and it's really hit home for me, which is I don't want to look at someone and say, how do you fit into my team? I want to know how you're going to add to that team. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we started looking at was, hey, when I inherited the team, when I moved over, I was running public sector, moved over to run Americas, I inherited a very, very technical team, very network savvy, because that was the profile that Forescout, that the engineering team hired. Here's all these things, and you have to be really technical. And so to build that team, I started saying, okay, I'm now going to look for people who have skill sets in security, in endpoint. We found someone who was a programmer who was really good in orchestration and came in. And I remember people being like, you realize he doesn't know networking. And he's even like, I don't know networking. I don't know security. But the great thing is he came in and he brought in such a great skill set that was different, that anytime someone needed to write a script or anything to like orchestrate products together, they could lean on him. And he was so good at it that when he had networking questions, everyone was like, oh, I'll help, because I want him to help me when I need it. And it just created this sort of like growing culture. And then, you know, we wanted people with different backgrounds, because each time you made the team more sticky. And so that's been a big part, is I want to know, what are you going to bring to the team? What's the value add there? Not just from a technical, but just personality as well.
I like that.
I want to work at Forescout.
I know.
I don't want to work. I just want to be there. Can I just be part of your guys' team meetings and laugh and chuckle? So, okay. So you trying to find a good balance to the team. What are your thoughts on balancing work and life as far as as you look at your team and the stress in cybersecurity sales? I mean, this is a very high demand job. So how do you envision your team work in their personal lives with their professional lives?
And there's a lot of travel, right? We believe that face-to-face is really the best way. So we end up getting on a plane or getting in a car and traveling a lot. So balance is really important. And it's not just, you know, balancing your family, but also balancing the things you need for yourself, right? I like to do certain things, and I want to make sure I have time for that as well. And it's sort of another mantra that I have. And, so I sort of grew up in the DoD world. And so I had working with these defense women that had made their way through, they had really good advice. And so there was a general who made a comment at one point, and she said, balance is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You're never going to get balance on a day-to-day basis. So if you try to fit in all the things you want to do in one day, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen quality. So, you know, to spend time, I have three kids, to spend time with my kids and give my husband the time he needs, and also have time for myself and my hobbies, my team and work, I can't fit that all in one day. But if I look over the course of a month, do I give my family the time to nurture and culture them? You know, am I giving, you know, my husband what he needs? Am I personally investing in myself, whatever that might be? It's much easier to take a step back and say, you know what? Yesterday was a crazy day. I was training all day, and then I went right into an event at night. And by the time I looked at my watch, it was 10 o'clock at night. With the time change, I'm like, whole family's in bed. I'm not going to have a chance to talk to them. But it's okay, because I know that this weekend when I come home, I can guarantee my phone's going away, electronics are away, we'll make a trip to the lake, and we're going to have some good quality board game time, right? We're going to have some good family time together. And my kids are perfectly okay. They understand that I'm working, but that their time is their time.
Have you always been very conscious of that, or was that a lesson learned? I know, especially small kids are going to have different needs, and as they get older, but now you're running them around everywhere, right? But have you had to really work on that, or has that always just been a philosophy that you've known?
I did have kids a little bit later in life, and so I think it was quite a blessing. They've always been such a priority for me. When I traveled a lot when they were young, And so they're very well adjusted. They're very independent. I also have a very active husband. So it's great, because on occasion he would send me, they'd be like 4, 6, and 8. And he'd send me pictures of them all folding their own laundry in the living room. I was like, this is great. But I told them, I empowered them. And I said, look, at any point in time, if you feel like mommy's job is a problem, or you know you're sad because of mommy's job, you tell me, and then you have that power.
Wow.
And they never invoked it, because I think they got that time for me. They understood what the job had provided us, and we had that really good, we had a really good bond. But we still, today, you know, my son will be like, okay, when are you coming back? And I'm like, okay, I'm coming back on Thursday. Okay, what time? And then, you know, I'll stop and I'll say, do you want me to stay? Like, is this a point? Is this a turning point? And be like, no, I'm good. I just want to know what time you come back. Yeah. So it's just that communication with the kids and knowing that they're always a priority has really been helpful.
I love the empowerment thing. I'm guessing a lot of people don't offer that to their kids, and I like that. I think that's a great idea.
Well, there's a certain amount of empowerment you want to give the kid, right?
I mean, there's some people that overdo it. I mean, let's be honest.
But I mean, your husband has got to be an amazing team player. I think it's very difficult, and it's not a. And this is a very women-specific point I'm about to make. But it is somewhat unusual when you have a woman that pursues a career, the husband or the partner, whatever it might be. I don't want to say they switch roles, but there's a lot of, you know, seesawing back and forth on how to help each other out, if you will. I that's commendable for your husband. I'm giving him props.
No, for sure. He's fantastic. But that is, I mean, there is times, right, where we go to work functions and he, you know, is taking that back seat, and he's, you know, he's really great at kind of not getting, you know, he's proud. Let's put it that way. He'll be proud instead of, you know, having any sort of issue or concerns about power.
This is a total aside question that's just popping up in my head. So we can edit this out, Aaron, if you want to. Is this, do you feel women in general have to look for a partner that's going to be supportive if they want a leadership type career or a very, time-consuming career?
I think women look for partners that are supportive in whatever they want to do.
100%.
I mean, we made it very clear. I have a strong personality. I know it's funny. You know, we talked about the article on women.
Shh, you're killing me. Okay, go ahead. So go ahead. It's all right.
No, don't worry about it.
No, go ahead. We talk about
agency
it.
Agency is a big thing, right? Can we transition into that?
Yeah,
is that okay?
Yeah, go for it.
She just checked her watch. Oh my God, who's running this interview, lady? I'm just kidding.
No, we should transition to it. No, you're good. You're good.
No, Aaron's the one that's keeping us on time, apparently, because I didn't look at... Both of you guys have watches. I don't know what that means.
All right, but transition to it. Yeah. Yes, please.
So it's funny because the article does talk about how, you know, it's very hard. Women have made from competency and community, right? We are really good with empathy and all these emotions, but the agency side, which is the... kind of the more decision-making, stronger aggression, it's really hard for women to be in that role. And I remember the first time I was called a control freak, which is why I just said, you know, I asked if we could transition. I tend to ask a little bit more now, but I was called a control freak and I was so devastated. And I was like, what do you mean? Don't you like having someone that helps you make decisions? Don't you want me to make decisions? So I did. I realized that I'm perfectly fine with making decisions, but I did have to kind of check the way I did it. And I'm it has really helped me be self-aware on when I want to do something or when I'm going to make a decision, I do take a lot of inputs. I have no problem making the decision, but I want to hear and I want to make sure I'm making the best decision for everyone. So although I think women have natural skill sets around, you know, being driven, and I know we get called bossy, and I just think if we can use that skill set to kind of for good, right? It's okay to come in and be dominant, but we also need to know how are we affecting other people in the room and be self-aware of the way we make people feel. I would hope men have that same feeling.
I was just gonna say, I don't think any male that I've ever really met that's, let's just say, no, there's been really great male leaders, and then the bad ones, there's more often than not that I've seen, unfortunately. I don't think those guys give two craps about the audience or their team. It was more about the...
Do you think that they'll, in this day and age, that they'll continue with the emphasis that's put on compassion and empathy? Do you think those leaders are going to make it? I feel like we're starting to recognize that male, strong male leadership is not who people want to work for, and it's okay to leave those leaders. I actually find the reason why, so we didn't really talk about this, but the retention rate for my team is phenomenal.
I forgot to mention that. I'm sorry. Yes.
I think that there are a lot of people that are like, oh, wait, hey, I like working for someone. And I'm not even gonna say working for a woman. I like working for someone that cares, that asks, you know, when I'm having, you know, when something, I have to take some time off, they care, right? There's some empathy there. I know it's going to sound crazy, but even having to let people go is, hey, it is, we try to make it as honest and real. It's not, it's a process that's painful, but I genuinely want to make you better from it. I know you're going to hate me, but this has happened. And I do think that there's just some skill sets, whether it's a man or a woman, that empathy, compassion, honesty, it's valued now. Control, dominance, aggression, people will quit those jobs, right? They'll move on.
Yeah, there's plenty of articles that talk about people quit managers, not companies.
Right.
Or jobs, right, for that matter.
Well, and even look, like, we'll go back to basketball, like Bobby Knight, for example. That used to be like the way to do it, right? You'd yell at people,
throw chairs,
get angry. Now it's not cool anymore. Like, that's really frowned upon. And so you see it happening in even the areas where it's like, well, he's your coach, just listen to him. Yeah. Where that's more, we got to be more empathetic. So hopefully millennials will drive that.
So just to make a addendum here, and I don't know if you want to add it in later on, but the article of which Ellen had mentioned was Quartz at Work. Just want to make sure that no one accuses me of grabbing random articles. It was actually an article that was on LinkedIn that went viral on LinkedIn World, which is so funny to me. Yeah. LinkedIn is becoming such social media. But okay, so we had talked about a lot about your leadership. If I can transition to a final topic here, which is the state of security in general. So we had a previous guest from a particular organization, starts with the letter D, four-letter word, and great organization. I don't want to slam, because we're not slamming, but she made a controversial statement, which I think is hilarious, because I want to prod you, if you don't mind. So she says, security is dead. Now, I know I see some giggles over here. The reason why she said that is because there are no, at least in the United States, no real repercussions for businesses not protecting their own environment and the data of which is getting hacked or et cetera. So in her statement, she's saying security is dead as far as you still need good business practices. From a societal standpoint, oh, well, Marriott, they got my information and oh, there goes my 100,000 million points to stay at a hotel. That's all they get, whatever. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's interesting. I do think that there are penalties, right? There are certainly, like, look at the fines that some of these companies are paying. There is repercussion. I personally think, so no, I don't think security is dead. It is job security for me.
It's provocative, and she actually said it was job security as well. So,
yeah. I think that personally, what I'll see is that, or what I think we'll see, and it's already sort of started, is just more legislation around it. Is that, you know, we have an we feel like we expect, as you know, maybe I'm going to say as Americans, we expect a certain level of protection when we make a purchase, right? When you go out and buy milk, it's got an expiration date. It's going to tell you whether it's good or not. And you buy the milk that's not expired, you expect to come home and drink it and be fine, right? When you buy a crib for your baby, you know that it's been through testing and that there's all these safety things that have been checked because they don't want to be sued, right? There's some legislation that's happened there, right? We just have this level of expectation. Unfortunately, it has not transitioned into security. Or into technology, I'm sorry. So when we buy things like the Nest, the Ring doorbell, the Nest cameras, we buy these IoT devices for our houses, IoT devices for our children, we have all of these things. There's no security built in. Unfortunately, the U.S. population has just expected that I'm safe. I mean, I just paid money for this product. Of course, it can't harm me, but it's not there yet in IoT, in technology. And so I think that, you know, big companies, there are going to be more penalties and more fines, right? There are more compliance audits that are happening. For instance, and I don't want to go too far into the technology here, but the contracting world, like DoD, has something called DFARS, which is their federal regulations. If you are going to do business with DoD, you have to meet a certain level of controls. And now they're having audits around it. So now they're saying, if you even want to apply for or submit a contract, you have to meet these certain security levels. And that includes things like universities that get funding from the government. It's now moving into civilian agencies. So there are going to be more enforcement points along the way for companies to meet security controls.
Do you think IoT, especially after 5G is ratified, I mean, it's going to just explode. Smart cities, for an example. I think Four Scout's perfectly primed for that. You're welcome, Four Scout, free advertisement. No, I did not get paid for that. But no, in general, though, I think with technology and IoT particularly, is security going to always be that afterthought, that under the radar, under, like, it's happening behind the scenes, like the, I call it the magic pixie dust. The way I described it back in the day was, how many times does the CISO and their organization get a phone call from an end user saying, hey, thanks for protecting me from my network or from my email today. I got zero viruses. I mean, it's an ungrateful business. Yeah. Do you think it's going to be more prominent now that IoT and as we evolve our technology, is it going to be more prominent, or people are just going to simply assume it should already be embedded?
Yeah, more appreciated. Honestly, I don't know that people understand what needs to happen. So that's why they it's the expectation that it exists. So I don't know that it'll be as appreciated because you don't know, like, you don't know when the police have protected you at times, yeah. Right? You don't know what you don't know.
Because they don't advertise. You're like, hey, I protected you from $5 million. Right.
We don't know about that. So yeah, it'll probably continue to be that way. But I do think that IoT is just, it's going to change the way we live our lives. I'm very passionate. You mentioned smart cities, so I'm going to comment on it. But we do a lot of work with cities and all the stuff that they're doing with IoT. And it's really fascinating on how they're using it to be productive. Like using, you know, it used to take 2 years to go and inspect a dam, right? They'd have a human that would go and inspect every inch of the dam using scaffolding. And then when they got to the bottom, what would happen? Start all over again. Wow. Now they have drones that go through and are constantly inspecting and are 100% more reliable than that human that was going through and inspecting every inch. There's enforcement. I mean, now they have, like, all of their gear has sensors in it, right? So you have police officers that, you know, their gun holster has a sensor. So imagine a world where they pull out their gun and it immediately sends a note back to dispatch. So now dispatch knows that they've pulled out a gun and they know where they are because they've got tracking devices. And let's say that their wearables, all the IoT in their clothing, and they get shot. And so now that recently, IoT can send a note to the first responder to say he's been shot. And it can even get as intelligent to say, we know that it's a certain bullet that's hit him. And it's hit him in the left lung. And, you know, all these specific details. So when the first responder shows up, he already has all of this intel to treat this.
Or she. Police officer.
She. Thank you.
It.
Person,
they, yeah.
Or they. Yes. Or they. Get it right.
Shame on me. But yeah, so they have that information. I mean, it's really going to change the way we live our lives, and it's happening so fast that it's even hard to say, you know, in 3 years, in 5 years, it's really going to impact.
Only because we just had a recording recently on Gen X, and you're part of it, and we are an oft-forgotten generation. Just a population size, we're smaller, we don't really talk a lot, and marketing decided to focus on boomers and millennials. Do you think, as a Gen Xer leader, which, by the way, there was another article that's going around LinkedIn, that Gen X leadership is not going to be as prominent because boomers aren't retiring. They're sticking in their jobs, and Gen Xers are kind of getting shortchanged. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, that's interesting. No, I disagree because I think that it's going to be you might be a leader, but if you're not continuing to be effective and you're not making the changes that you need, I'm hoping that the Gen Xers are making that impact, that maybe you don't have to retire, but you have to give that innovation to the up-and-comers. You have to give them a chance to come in and make an impact. It's interesting. I think there's going to be enough of an impact and enough of change that it'll cause some disruption.
All right, so I'm going to try to wrap things up here. So do you feel now you as a Gen X leader, millennials are now approaching the 40 years old, right? They're 38 right now, pushing 40. And I've been told by some 36-year-olds that they felt more closer to the Gen X generation than the millennials. How are you preparing and mentoring for them to be the next generation leaders?
Yeah, so in the technology world, I think it's really interesting because one of the things that we've done is we've helped them understand that leaders are not just managers, right? So especially in the engineering world, because a lot of really good engineers, it's not necessarily their skill set or it's not a good use of skill set to manage people. And so we've really done a great job at creating ladders that are both management as well as technical leaders. And we need the technical leaders just as much. And so giving them other avenues, I think one of the things that we've done really well, and I like to use the basketball analogy, which is I'm a really good basketball player. As she mentioned, you know, I'm 6'1". I never mentioned
you're 6'1". Oh, I just said you're taller than me.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
Which at 5'2", everyone's taller than me.
You're right. I'm sorry. So you want me on your basketball team. I can tell you that. However, you don't want me as your point guard. So finding the right fit on the team is really, really important. And so what I've found as I've kind of moved up in management in these teams is that some of the people were really struggling in some management positions. But with a shift into more of a technical leader position, you're still a leader. You're still important. You still have a path. And you're still making an impact. That's a better fit. So I feel like, you know, there might be other people, millennials coming up. We just have to realize that your value is not around the amount of people that report to you. I just think that's bunk. I think it's about the impact that you make to the organization.
Ooh, on that note, Aaron, do you have any other questions for Ellen?
I don't. We need to wrap this one up.
You rocked this, Ellen. Thank you so much. I had so much fun with you.
Thank you. That was fun. Thank you.
So I think right now, I think that'll wrap it up for another round of our Women in Tech Leadership Series. Ellen Sundra, VP of Americas Systems Engineering at Forescout. Ellen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.